The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by One More. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the Dual Driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. Or maybe you want to fill a decently large room with a pair of One More portable Bluetooth speakers. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY with no spaces. And you'll save an additional 20% on these already competitive prices. You'd spend over $80 less on One More's Dual Driver ANC True Wireless compared to that other brand's pro earbuds. You know who I'm talking about. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com. And remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout to save big. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another Monday morning tech chat show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I am Juan Carlos Bagnell, the Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast series, but the QA is the important part. That obviously stands for question and answer, so I like to make this an interactive conversation about the top tech news stories of the week. But why I like to hold my podcast on a Monday is it gives us some time to look back at the week, kind of dig through some of these news stories, some of these tech topics. Maybe there was some breaking news over the weekend, and we can spend some time together focusing on those stories and really getting a grip on our feels for those stories. This is going to be a really casual, chill, off-the-cuff kind of podcast this week. We are full on Techtober. What is this, the 19th? We're smack dab in the middle of the month, and there is just way too much gear to talk about. I'm scrambling to put together videos, and I'm writing articles and editorials, and trying to, you know, guest on other friends' podcasts, and there's just a lot. So this week I don't have as regulated a show. I don't have as formatted a show. There is a little bit of news that I want to cover right at the top. We're still going to do housekeeping, but we're going to spend some time talking about the Pixel 5, because I've been living with the Pixel 5 for a bit. We're going to spend some time talking about the LG Wing, because I've been living with the LG Wing for a bit. And then over here on the side is this giant red box that I got over the weekend from OnePlus. And we've got to talk about that too. So I put out a call in the chat in what order we're going to talk about these phones. And so far, the general, what I'm seeing in terms of order is Wing last. So we're gonna save the Wing for the very end of the show to close out the show. But I still think we need kind of a ranking, whether I'm gonna start the gadget block with the Pixel 5 or start the gadget block by unboxing the OnePlus 8T. So, and one of the things you might notice is this is going to be one of my broader cross-platform podcasts, especially because I'm doing an unboxing here. Not every podcast is coming back to the YouTube, but if you're catching this on the YouTube, most weeks we stream only on the Twitch and the Periscope. So, this week is just a little taste of the normal community kinds of conversations. Dave Burns is saying unbox, that way we can get the awkward out of the way. I'm still very positive on what OnePlus is showing off with the 8T. You know, we've got the Galaxy S20 FE, we've got the Pixel 5 as competition. It's all. I want more choices in this space, and I think OnePlus's pivot here is a very interesting one. So I definitely want to be spending some time and doing sort of our due diligence talking OnePlus 8T. Mm-hmm. Dank Pikmin God was here. You should stream more on YouTube, not gonna lie. I mean, if my stats weren't absolutely murked by YouTube live streams and longer videos, then I would. And if more people were sharing on YouTube and my stats weren't garbage, then I'd absolutely be paying YouTube more attention. I'm actually going to have a video out about my relationship with YouTube this week, and it's going to be another cranky YouTuber complaining about the platform kind of video. So, yes. if you want to see my videos, they're all on YouTube and you can share them there. But if you go to somegadgetguy.com or you check out my Twitch, a higher quality version of every review I make goes to those platforms. From Code Exploit, will you be reviewing the Bose Sleep Buds 2 in the future? I hope to be. I don't know if I'm going to be spending some time right away with Bose. I have so much gear right now. I could make a video a day till the end of the year, and I think that would just about catch me up on all of the review videos and the gadget and accessory videos that I want to make. So, let's kick off some housekeeping. Housekeeping is actually going to be a longer block. Is there an over-under? Do we have some estimates? What are we thinking for housekeeping this week? Because it was a busy week on the SomeGadgetGuy.com and on doing some friend shows. Charlie Spirit Song saying over 9. Dave Burns saying 12. Simon says Hypno, 15. Okay, it's 9:05 in the a.m. I'm going to try and be done before 15 minutes. So Simon says Hypno is my upper limit. Keynes is saying 15 also. Okay, all right. Let's do this. Now, oh, I should probably be on the right browser page. Click. So from last week, we start these conversations. You know, it bothers me intensely when embargo week lifts and then suddenly we've got full reviews. I had this phone for a long weekend before the embargo lifted. So Pixel 5, who is this phone for? Is it a flagship? Just starting the conversation, I'm not trying to end it. There is no conclusion that we can draw from using a phone for 3 or 4 days. But even in 3 or 4 days, we can still generate some opinions. And I had some thoughts to share about my early use on the Pixel 5. But then also, you know, it's me. So we want to talk a little bit about the philosophy of how we rank, review, and grade different phones. So that's a video conversation you can check out there. And also participation in the comments is always welcome. Then moving right along, I've gotten this question several times and I felt it was finally time to put together a blog post that I can just reference. How Some Gadget Guy tests phones with real world apps for benchmarks and reviews. And I want to open this one up real quick because I am not a fan of generating a synthetic benchmark score and then calling it a day. So I think, you know, we look at things like Geekbench. It's absolutely a number that you can point to that grades performance, and then you can compare that number. Is the number bigger or is the number smaller? But this really hasn't always correlated with real-world applications. So I break down the list of apps that I use to test different phones, like video rendering on PowerDirector, KineMaster, and LumaFusion. I'm now adding a podcast test to my smartphone reviewing. So generating an hour-long podcast with bumpers and tags and ads. Now we can time that. We can really see how a phone performs. Stabilizing plugin in Google Photos, RAR Lab for file compression, games that actually generate a frames per second ticker when the game self-reports its own frame rate. So a game like Bright Ridge is one that I lean on pretty heavy. And then some of the battery testing that I do, because I do not do super hardcore battery benching. And I'm always gonna be open to folks adding to this list. I am not interested in adding another synthetic benchmark, a graphics benchmark, a storage benchmark, Antutu. I don't care about that score. What I want is a real application that someone might use. I don't really care if I get a big number in Geekbench. I don't do any of my work in Geekbench, you know? So it's a good place to start, this number bigger than that number. But often we'll see bigger number on one phone and then slower video rendering on that same phone. So it's something that I'm still open to. Please, if you've got suggestions and not just, hey, did you play this one game and does it look kind of smooth? What we need is a universal way to track the performance of that game. And so the game benchmarking tools haven't worked very well over the last year. So I'm open to what I'm hoping is, you know, maybe there's also something like photo editing. You know, maybe there's some way I can put together a ridiculous, I mean, like over the top. I need to be able to time it. But maybe like a test in Lightroom or something like that. People would really want to use Lightroom to do some heavy lifting and leave their laptop at home. So yes, that article there, you can see the actual apps that I use, and you can join that. You can install all of those apps. It's not a proprietary test where I keep it all under lock and key. It's just synthetic benchmarks are easy to game. And if they're easy to manipulate, then you don't get real results out of them. Charlie Spirit Song, why not Pokemon Go? Because I'm not sure what I'd be measuring in Pokemon Go. What performance is it? Is that a battery benchmark? Because that would be emblematic of how that app would really be used. Oh, you are saying it's the best battery stressor. The problem is I don't really play that game. And you know, again, I play Bright Ridge. I list the games that I play in that article, but it's tricky. And this is the part of the problem. Gabaletta is saying, I do like Samsung gaming service where you can choose to show temperature, frames per second, GPU usage, and CPU usage all the time. See, that's great. And now what I need is an overlay that can do that on all Android phones from the same app developer. You know, I don't quite trust self-reporting from Samsung and then compare that against the self-reporting from Xiaomi. You know, like I want some type of universal platform, and the game bench tools, what was the, I was using KF Mark for a while. They don't seem to work consistently on Android 10 or above. So whatever changed in permissions and, you know, going through and doing my USB, my developer settings and stuff, they don't seem to always work. And that's what I need, is a universal, it measures the same way kind of platform. Charlie Spirit Song, someone make one overlay. It's like that XKCD comic, you know, like, oh, there are 14 different ways to do this. We should just make one that should be the standard. 6 months later, man, there are 15 different ways to do this. We should make one. That's the way to do this. Boing Byte, yes, we do. We need MSI Afterburner for Android. That would be great. And from ER1980, it would be interesting to test xCloud games going forward, as that is the market that will explode on mobile over the coming years. Don't know how much is dependent on stream connection and on hardware itself, but it's an option. And again, a lot of these tests that you'll see, someone does a speed run and they open up a social media app. That's more a test of your internet connection than it is your ability to open an app quickly. And that's another reason why I don't do speed runs on my channel. Let's finish up housekeeping. Like I said, I wanted this to be done in under 15 minutes, and now I'm getting sidetracked. I always get sidetracked, but I digress. Another major video that went up. So the public version is called The Camera Conclusion. And I got to spend some lovely quality time when it launched with the Sony Xperia 1 Mark II. And I've already had to send back the Xperia 5 Mark II. I just had it on a very short-term loaner. But now I've finally gotten enough samples. The update for RAW support, native RAW support in the Sony Camera Photo Pro app is out. And so on public, if you go to somegadgetguy.com, you can watch the full camera conclusion. If you hit up the Patreon has the full 33-minute video Looking at all of the analysis, comparing samples, looking at, you know, the video performance, why there are three different apps on the phone, the exposure, the white balance. It's a phone that feels the most like a camera that I've ever shot on. Literally nothing shoots like a Sony. So that's a good thing and a bad thing for some people out there. So if you want the full scoop on what Sony's been able to accomplish, and as an evolution of what they started last year, that's also the exciting thing too, is this isn't just Sony making a camera phone. This is a path for Xperia that started last year, has been wonderfully refined this year, and has a number of pros and cons that are very different than how other phone manufacturers are trying to make their gadgets. So it's, it was one of the more difficult and longer videos for me to put together. And I had to staple the Xperia 5 and the Xperia 1 together. There's no way I was going to be able to finish a 30-minute Xperia 1 video and then turn right around and flip an Xperia 5. And Simon says, Hypno, the 5.2 looks like a great little phone. I like Sony's path this year. I think it would be a mistake. I thought it was a mistake for folks to sleep on Sony last year as a first generation reset for what the Xperia brand should be. Those phones were solid. They both got better this year, and it's pretty great. And Venix is saying, yeah, benchmarks are pretty stale nowadays. I feel like the term benchmarking has gotten a bad rap for all of the numbers that don't relate to anything from apps that just test those numbers. When you pull up a RAR lab and it's the same compression test that you can run on a PC and you can directly compare. I'm compressing a bunch of files to make a RAR, and I can measure how much data per second that phone can crunch, and it directly relates to what I can crunch on a PC. We are getting so close to phone performance that does, I mean, across all sectors of consumer tech, that can really well replace traditional computers and laptops. And Fat Produce just joined the chat. Greetings, Earthlings. All right, let me get this out of the way here. And we still have some more housekeeping to wrap up. So this last week, I actually did a chill stream to unbox the LG Wing. So if you haven't heard me prattle on enough through the podcast, you can also catch a two-hour chill stream, not just taking it out of the box, and also with some amazing packaging. Like LG's presentation has improved substantially over the last couple of years just for that reviewer kit. But then also setting it up and testing, like the we tested some of the camera features. We tested the desktop mode. We went in pretty deep for a setup video. I probably won't be able to go that deep for the OnePlus 8T today, but we're going to spend some time. It's going to be good times. Let me get this out of the way here. And then on the Patreon, we just hosted our first game night. Had a lovely time with 12 of my closest friends on the Patreon. But we streamed some Battlelands Royale, and the bots totally kicked our ass. I mean, it wasn't even close. We're all really proper bad at this this adorable, cartoony, top-down, twin-stick shooter battle royale game. But it was fun. It was really fun getting to spend some time with folks on the Patreon. I think for closer to Halloween, we're going to do a movie night. And I'm thinking we'll probably do like a co-stream. Everyone pushes play at the same time on a movie in the public domain. And I'm thinking it should be Night of the Living Dead. It's one of my all-time favorites. You can get a Blu-ray quality rip of it for free legally on archive.org. And then we can all join in on the same live chat and have a hilarious time looking at the proto-zombie that George Romero came up with. So I'm thinking that's what we'll do for a Halloween community stream. But this is something we're trying to build up a bit more on the Patreon, is more community activities where we can all hang out, have a good time, chat, play games. I think what I want to build this up to is having kind of like a regular schedule of a game night, a movie night, and then maybe a music night where we all kind of look at different playlists and we sit and chill, listen to some music and talk about it and have a good time. Then off of SomeGadgetGuy.com and off of the SomeGadgetGuy Patreon, I also had a lovely time chatting with the folks all about Android. Ron and Flo had me on to talk about Xperias, to talk about the Pixel 5. Before I could really say a whole lot, I was still under embargo, so it was a little awkward. But then I also got to break down the hardware on the Mavvoi TicWatch Pro 3. I really like this smartwatch, and I'm hoping that Google can do it right for this supposed upcoming Android Wear OS update that's coming soon. So that was a great conversation. I love the folks over on All About Android. It's one of my favorite podcasts to listen to, let alone the fact that they let me join the podcast to talk about stuff. And then speaking of podcasts, back in June, I had a chat with Adam Dowd. Adam Dowd is running his own podcast called Benefit of the Dowd, which I would also recommend checking out his Patreon. Again, supporting your favorite content creators and making good content. He wanted me on to talk about tech and politics, which is something that I do a lot on this channel. We're going to be talking about a couple political stories in our news block before we get to all of the shiny, fun gadgets. But, this was just a little bit more about our responsibilities being good tech citizens. It's tricky because I obviously have certain political leanings, but one of the major aspects that I hope to bring to this conversation, to bring to this discussion, is getting people active. If you're a fan, if you're watching a stream like this, you're probably savvier than the average bear. You're probably more tech savvy than most of our elected officials. You have something to contribute to this conversation. And I think it's a bad look for techies to sit on the sidelines and think we're above politics because we're really into tech. Well, that means people who aren't tech savvy get to make all of the decisions for you. And if we're not leading those discussions and if we're not respected in those conversations, then they're going to come to conclusions that we don't want them to come to. So being on Adam's podcast was a conversation in that vein. It wasn't so much the "this is what I think you should vote for" kind of conversation. That's not really what I was interested in talking about. But it was more, if you really follow this stuff, if you really pay attention to this stuff, then you should be involved. You should be joining these conversations. And so one more, and we can finally close out. I'm over 15, aren't I? Yeah, I am. I was just really honored to be a part of this Android Central video epic collaboration. Now, I'm pulling this from our glowing rectangles, but this is like top YouTubers reveal what they love and hate about headphones. And it was me and LFA Reviews kind of providing a counterpoint to some of the more popular Bluetooth options and popular products talked about in this video. I just felt really good. Two of us there were kind of representing Team Premium Audio. But I was really honored to be a part of that, where they let me, again, same interview questions. Everyone got the same interview questions. But obviously, like, I start answering those questions and I'm kind of rattling on about hearing health and hearing loss. And I try not to turn everything into an opportunity to soapbox, but I often fail. So it was wonderful to be a part of, and that was really cool. And the folks at Android Central have been putting together some really cool stuff. So I'm glad they would have someone like me on, even though I think the obvious joke is like, I would never be a member of a club that would have me as a member. I'm way over. Like I said, last week was a whirlwind, just an absolute whirlwind of activity. Tons of stuff came out, tons of phones to play with, tons of gadgets to talk about, tons of news, and it was pretty intense. So all of the stories we're going to be talking about this week, all of the news articles, all of the housekeeping that I just did there, everything's going to be in the show notes on somegadgetguy.com, where you can catch all of this, the wrap up, the audio version of the podcast, if you want to just take a listen to this show. Simon says Hypno, 17 minutes, I win. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. So, I do have a little bit of news that I think we just need to keep our eyes on, and I'm not going to hit the news block too heavy because housekeeping ran a little long this week. I got toys. I want to get to the toys. And we still got to do the subreddit plug too. So, let's knock out news block, and I say this every week. Oh, let's not spend too much time on the news. I'm going to move through the news. Please contribute comments. I want to engage, but I'm going to try to not be overly distracted by the news of the week. So, I feel like the most important story, the most important topic for us to keep an eye on in light of the upcoming election, and in light of some of the recent moves we've seen against major tech companies for antitrust investigations, and how our popular platforms contribute to conversations like political conversations, the thing I think we kind of need to keep an eye on is there is a Senate investigation, there's a House Judiciary Committee, there are individual state antitrust investigations happening for companies like Facebook and Google and obviously YouTube under that Google umbrella and Amazon. So we're seeing this conversation play out in several sectors at the state level, at the federal level, and then at the regulatory level with individual commissions. And I feel we're in danger of conflicting regulatory actions hitting these different corporations. It's not good for our economy. It's not good for sort of the future of tech and communications. And it also doesn't arrive at the regulations that will actually help us move forward. So, I mean, obviously, if you've been watching my podcast, you've heard some of the conversations we've heard, we've talked about with the Communications Decency Act, Section 230, which affords protections to platforms. But then those platforms also tend to act as publishers, and they've been having it both ways. I don't think anyone would disagree that we need to look at some reform to the Communications Decency Act. I'm not encouraged by the news of the FCC wading into this to say that they can regulate social media. This is an article coming by way of The Verge, written up by McKenna Kelly. FCC will move to regulate social media after censorship outcry. On Thursday, Federal Communications Chairman Ajit Pai said that the agency will seek to regulate social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter at the behest of the Trump administration's executive order signed earlier this year. Quote, members of all three branches of federal government have expressed serious concerns about the prevailing interpretation of the immunity set for in Section 230 of the CDA. There is bipartisan support in Congress to reform the law. He continues, social media companies have a First Amendment right to free speech, but they do not have a First Amendment right to a special immunity denied to other media outlets such as newspapers and broadcasters. So the frustrating thing is that is accurate. We all feel like a Facebook is having it both ways. We represent a platform and people post to our platform, so you can't sue us for what they post. But then they also get to say, we report to advertisers because that's one of the major sources of our income, of our revenue. And if advertisers are unhappy, then we absolutely manipulate the feed of content that people receive to improve some stats or to pull stories. And so we can publish content in a way that makes the people who bankroll our site more profitable. That's a conflict. The problem is the Trump executive order really doesn't pass the legal sniff test. That executive order was mocked and ridiculed pretty aggressively because it was grossly unconstitutional. Well, now we've got a Supreme Court justice that's in hearings that will probably back plays by this administration, kind of flip the court so that those types of executive orders can be passed. And even though this FCC has been completely hands off for, you know, issues like broadband deployment and net neutrality, keeping a fair and even marketplace, they seem to get involved very aggressively when there's a partisan angle that supports this administration. So I am much more in line with some of the regulatory action that we're seeing coming from the states. If there's an antitrust investigation into Facebook's business practices, I think that's going to have a better outcome for consumers. If it's something coming directly from the top where I haven't seen Ajit Pai, as the chairman of the FCC, act in good faith on some of these major topics, then I have more serious concerns about what the outcome will be for censorship or for removing content from a platform or suing a platform into oblivion because, you know, they published someone else's content that was critical of this administration. So this is absolutely something that as techies, we need to follow. We need to keep an eye on for where this ends up. And then, so TrendNet, TrendNet 18, any articles, although it won't affect me because I live in Asia, still would like to know more about it. One of the things that I would be very anxious about in other parts of the world is seeing how Canada, the United States, and the EU, and the UK, now the UK is sort of not in and not really a part of the EU, because those are going to be the tips of the spear. How the EU responds to some of this. Like, I there was a story I bounced, I'm not going to talk about, but, like, Brussels is looking at just ridiculously punitive, like, big stick legislation against social media companies. The EU has been way more aggressive about data and privacy rights. That's going to be one of the main international conflicts, is how do we reconcile global communication, global commerce, and social media traffic around the globe with completely different regulatory bodies weighing in on what's permissible. And that's going to have widespread ramifications for people outside of those regions. So South America, Pan-Pacific region, Australia. I mean, like, everyone needs to be watching what we end up doing, especially if we make some big mistakes. One of the reasons why I feel like this is such a precious conversation leading up to the election is because some of the news that comes out of how social media manipulates the feed of content to consumers is very concerning. And the dovetailing into this, you know, we're talking about regulating social media. I'm also very concerned when we pick up stories like this is from Gizmodo, from Elise Stanley. With Zuck's blessing, Facebook quietly stymied traffic to left-leaning news outlets. And then actually San Francisco CBS 5 reported on Facebook fires employee who shared proof of right-wing favoritism. So not only are we examining a business trend where Facebook actively manipulates the feed of content, and especially generating more outrage porn, because that seems to be Facebook's business model for consumers, is what keeps you on site longer. If it was really a platform for connecting people, then your feed would be more about people's day-to-day lives and sharing photos. But when you start altering the feed and it's no longer chronological, then what you're doing is inserting stories to keep someone clicking on the site longer. And I think we all understand this about Facebook, but it's an insidious manipulation, psychological tactic to keep you upset, to keep you frustrated, and to keep you on Facebook longer. So it would seem that there's an entrenched business model in supporting publications that aren't always of the highest quality or aren't good faith commentators on politics, because then conservatives are going to have their bias confirmed that everyone's out to get them, and liberals are going to be outraged because this article wasn't really accurate or wasn't a truthful representation of the political process. Win-win. So then when that is reported on, or when that information leaves Facebook, Facebook is punitive by firing the employees who leaked that information. And it does a lot of harm. It does a lot of harm to our communities. It does a lot of harm to our friendships. It does significant harm to our families. It's a dopamine delivery system that is built around conflict as their primary engagement business model. And it works down to the most insidious granular levels. Like, you know what? I'm just going to pop into Facebook real quick, see what's going on my feed. And if you linger on a story for just a second longer than the other stories, Facebook is tracking that behavior, and that's what they're going to continue trying to find analogous stories to post in your timeline. Ditto Instagram. My Instagram use plummeted as soon as I saw that I wasn't seeing content chronologically. I feel like such a jerk when someone posts some beautiful family moment or some, you know, like, this just happened, I'm so excited. And I go to, you know, leave a comment, and it was like, oh, that was posted 3 days ago. So I'm not really keeping up with my friends, and it makes me look like an even worse friend for not being clued in to what they're really doing when they're really doing it. It hit me really upset when I had a friend that I hadn't seen in years who was in town for a weekend and was like, oh yeah, hey, I'm hitting In and Out. This is so delicious. And we're like, holy crap. That was just like 10 minutes from me. I totally could have met up with you. And I saw it 2 days after. So he was like, you were already getting on a plane to fly back. And you're just like, this social media used to be this thing that you could count on. You know, like, it was this, I was kind of belching this text message out to all of my friends and family, and whoever wanted to pick up on it, they could. And other people could just ignore it. Now I can't even trust that, like, you know, I'm putting something out there and someone will see it like a week later. And you're like, that is completely contrary to what got me excited about social media in the first place. So, Dave Burns, Facebook makes billions making you and your family members hating them. Yeah, outrage porn is so much more effective than you sort of sharing the good moments of your real life. And so as long as you can keep these conversations on a very surface level, people will just argue past each other. And then you just feed a constant stream of crap that needs to be refuted, that needs to be debunked, that needs to be analyzed, that needs to be compared. That's going to keep people on your platform longer. Simon says, Hypno, Facebook et al. Scream about their rights whilst violating the rights of actual people. Yeah, but this is what's so frustrating, is because this conversation is very spectrum shades of gray. Facebook is in my opinion, everything Facebook does, they are a bad actor. They are not earnestly trying to join conversations or empower people to produce content. They are leeching off of the content of their users to fulfill the whims of their advertisers and to generate more revenue. But along the same way, they are the perfect poster child of why we need some kind of reform to Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. At the same time, I have very little faith in our current administration and our current FCC to wisely analyze CDA Section 230 and come up with meaningful reforms that won't just be broadsword hacks at the protections that platforms should enjoy. We need to have far-reaching conversations about anti-consumer behavior, anti-competitive behavior from multi-billion dollar corporations, consumer privacy, consumer protections. We need an entirely new legal framework. And I just don't believe our current elected officials, especially our current executive branch, have the nuance to arrive at that. And that's why we need to be ground floor, our local, our state politicians, our representatives at the federal level, but representing our states. We need to be annoying. We need to be bugging them to say, hey, by the way, Facebook sucks. I think these types of policies would help make it better, without completely unraveling the entire backbone of the internet as we understand it today.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r/glowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
From iMicTech, absolutely hate this change. You feel like, what's the point when you're ready to comment and you see it was a week ago? It's awful, man. It has just reinforced to me. I keep a private OneDrive folder just so I can share photos with family and friends. And you're like, that's real. Passively, you can check in on it whenever you want, but this is what we're up to. This is what we're doing. These are pictures, cute pictures of Lex that I won't post publicly because I didn't have every waking moment of my life documented publicly for internet points. And it's so much more refreshing. I'll get a text from my sister like, oh, hey, I saw you two went to the beach. How cute was that? And you're like, yeah, it's good times. And that's it. That's all it needed to be. But it was a meaningful interaction between me and my sister. And we shared some content and that was it. And that's all it needed to be. The whole programming of outrage interactions on Facebook and the fact that it's just so gallingly obvious that that's what their platform exists to do. We definitely need a market correction, and we've needed one for a while. Aw, TK Bay! Oh, with the sticker. Thanks, man. I appreciate that. I'm actually tracking this through a conglomerate chat. So it says, pair character bowing down saying thank you. No, thank you for supporting production on this channel. I really appreciate it. And it's definitely a conversation worth having. From here, we can cap news. We can be done with the news block and we can kind of move on. From John Faye 3, Joe Rogan said the algorithm on YouTube shows you on purpose things that annoy you because there is a better chance you will comment and you will get involved on the platform. Everything that I've criticized Facebook for, I feel YouTube has quietly introduced versions for themselves. Again, not in the same outrage direct feed, but it's things like watching engagement fall on my videos, but then seeing when I subscribe to a content creator who has 1,000 subs or less than 1,000 subs, and then YouTube just shoving million plus subscriber channels under my nose. That is manipulative. Oh, you like talking about tech? Well, you must want to follow this person who has 10 million subscribers and only does these surface level examinations of unboxing tech products. And read the room. I went out of my way to find a creator who was doing something different. But you don't care about that, YouTube, do you? So it's very similar. I would say same. Same but different, but same. And Aditya Nil, pair character, punching the air with fist and bump written on knuckles. Thank you. Thank you so much for kicking over the super sticker. I really appreciate it. So, Simon says, Hypno, we noticed you like wacky thumbnails. How little dignity can you have as a creator? Let's test that by looking at thumbnails. All right, we got to plug the subreddit real quick, and then we're going to get into some actual tech commentary. This is your last chance. Give me an order. Am I doing Pixel 5? Or the OnePlus 8T unboxing first. Ready, go. All right, every podcast has a subreddit. My podcast is no different. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Everything we were just complaining about with YouTube, this is a community that we're trying to build and is growing every week to support content that we feel deserves more attention. I've heard it so many times. Oh, but I don't want to spam everyone on my Twitter with good videos, because then people will be annoyed if I only share tech videos. Okay, but that doesn't mean you stop supporting your favorite content creators. Active participation is critical. So as a platform, one of the things that I wanted to build was a place for people to share videos that aren't getting the attention from the YouTube algorithm that we think they deserve. Every time a Patrick Norton falls off of YouTube, it's on us. It's on us for not helping to spread the word and to try and generate that kind of conversation and engagement. So these are the top stories, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. A number one with a bullet. I totally won. This is my, I need to preface this, especially for those of you watching on the YouTube stream. This is my subreddit. I don't often win on my subreddit, but this was a heavy week for me, and I seem to have built some momentum this week. If you'd like to see some other faces at the top of my own subreddit, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and don't be stingy with the upvotes. So, A number one was the LG Wing Chill Chat unboxing. I'm just winging it. Again, it's a 2-hour video, and it seemed to resonate quite well with the folks over on Glowing Rectangles. But number two, coming in from Team Vry with 850 subscribers, hands-on with the Poco X3 NFC. And I want to kick out here for just a second. When was the last time you watched a video on YouTube from someone with like 100,000 subscribers and the follow-up video was from a channel with less than 1,000? I really want you to think about that. This is something that is happening regularly on Glowing Rectangles. Subscribers putting out quality content with much, much smaller, they're just starting out, much smaller fan bases, much smaller subscribership. They're going toe-to-toe with channels with 100,000, 500,000, million subscribers. That, to me, speaks to the quality of engagement that we're building over on Glowing Rectangles. And then number three, my buddy, my bro, LFA Reviews, Earfun Air Pro ANC True Wireless Earbuds, level up. And again, I have to put out the special shout out for LFA Reviews, my comrade, my brother-in-arms, my other audiophile friend. If you absolutely hate your ears, like let's say you totally despise being able to hear things and you really hate quality audio, and like you watch a movie and you think, man, this would be so much better as a silent film, and I just wish I could take ice picks and just like pop my eardrums. I hate hearing things so much. You should not follow LFA Reviews. Okay? I mean, you'll just be frustrated. So you hate your biology that allows you to consume audio content. Do not follow LFA. The flip side also works really well. If you would like to hear better content and own nicer headphones and enjoy a more premium listening experience, then you should follow LFA Reviews. Oh, and Jason Riviera kicking over $5. I'm assuming that's a super sticker. I'm so sorry. Again, I'm on this sort of combined chat, so I can't really see what's going on. I just want to wrap up real quick. A couple other videos and articles that hit the Glowing Rectangles. ESA Does Tech, looking at the Motorola Razr 2020 5G, specifically looking at the camera. I am upvoting this right now because this is Mr. Tech Rant. Trent asking, should you buy an iPhone 12 in 2020? There's some doofus in a dopey cap with a punchable face talking about the Xperia 5 and the Xperia 1 cameras. Speedtest G, comparing the Sony Xperia 5 Mark II against the Sony Xperia 1 Mark II. You gotta love a Gary Explains video. And Tech Alter, another, just like an amazing commentator on tech and business, checking out Mozilla's next big thing. We've got Spectacular Gadgets looking, using Hold For Me feature on the Pixel 5. We've got This Is Tech Today. Brandon, again, he's got some silly thumbnails, but his commentary's on point. First look at the new Google Pixel 5, what the others didn't tell you in ASMR unboxing. And I'm going to click this right here. Meadow, Me Do, I don't know what your channel name is. me do unboxing with 3,800 subscribers, Techno POVA gaming on a budget. I think that's the Techno POVA. It's a phone I've never heard of, but apparently it's a gaming phone for people. Tech PhD, also looking at the iPhone Series 12. Just a really wonderful roundup of different different creators, different tech commentators, and at all tiers of the subscriber market. So, last plug, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and we can use more support. Again, part of this subreddit was built up on me auto-publishing content from IFTTT. We didn't see a lot of traction for Bored at Work over this last week because IFTTT is killing some of their recipes and I have to manually go through and submit, and I haven't been able to keep up with that this week. If you would like to build some karma on Reddit, you want to support content creators that need more attention, we'd love to see more Erica Griffin. We'd love to see more Bored at Work. We'd love to see some BW1. We'd love to see all of those content creators that you follow and have a platform that's not just the echo chamber on a much, much larger subreddit. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. All right. Let me take a sip of water here real quick because I am ridiculously underhydrated. I think this is the first time I've ever finished the introduction, housekeeping, and the news block, and the subreddit plug in under an hour. So let's see. I'm seeing a lot of Pixel 5, Pixel 5, Pixel 5. I'm seeing one OnePlus 8T. Whoever hit, thank you so much. I know there was a little spammy spam happening, so appreciate the banhammer there. That was good. So it looks like people are saying Pixel 5 first. So why don't we spend some time chatting out just, again, sort of my weak reactions using the Pixel 5. And then we'll do the unboxing, and then we'll wrap up with the LG Wing. So it's... Actually, I didn't have my Pixel 5 on, so I'm booting it up now. This has been a very interesting wrap to 2020. I think it's very telling that at the beginning of the year, we were talking about super expensive, the most premium phones and 5G prices just skyrocketing in North America. I remember those arguments I was getting into with people like, well, you know, OnePlus 8 costs way less in India, so they're just being greedy. And you're like, I think if you're doing business in the North American market, it is a completely different conversation for carriers and licensing and different technologies and the components. The OnePlus 8 had a different button arrangement on Verizon than it did as an unlocked phone. So after this social distancing situation hit us and we all started working from home and having severe restrictions on going out, and the economy has absolutely sort of dovetailed with that type of living restrictions, it's been really exciting watching the second half of 2020 pivot hard. So the top of the year, companies like Apple and Samsung were floating on phones like the Galaxy A series and the iPhone SE, the iPhone 11, the iPhone XR was still a heavy seller for Apple at the beginning of the year. So it only makes sense to me that we're going to close out the year and that the Pixel 5 represents something of that pivot. It feels a lot more like an LG Velvet than it does a true successor to the Pixel 4. How do I want to phrase this? It bothers me when you see reviews of the Pixel 5 that slam the Pixel 5 for not being a one-to-one upgrade over the Pixel 4, and then they cite the missing tech bits that they panned the Pixel 4 for having and making the Pixel 4 too expensive. Like, I'm thinking of one review specifically where it's like, well, it doesn't even have like the Soli, the radar gestures. And you're like, yeah, in your Pixel 4 review, you said that that was an expensive gimmick. So this is $200 less and has 5G than the Pixel 4. So what is it that we're really upset about? I don't know. I find that to be hypocritical and short-term memory. And then it's just sort of playing into the bias of people who weren't going to buy the Pixel anyway. But I think there's... ER1980 beat me to it. I think the word you're looking for is hypocrisy. DSO Thorn, awesome battery life, better screen, less bezels. Too bad it doesn't have the 865, but it costs $200 less. Bad phone. And Gabaletta, it's exactly that. Everyone was panning the Pixel 4 for the gimmicks, and now we are panning the Pixel 5 for not having the gimmicks. I think it's pretty clear. One, I just find it... I find it very less and less common. Oh, there's a wild Joshua Vergara in chat on YouTube. Everyone say, hey, Josh! Another very thoughtful content creator who is regularly well represented on our glowing rectangles because people seem to like him because they think he's a pretty cool dude. Sorry, but I digress. I completely lost track of what I was going to say. The overall conversation and what I've kind of come to glean from this, so few phones are really worthy of a one-year upgrade. When I do year-to-year comparisons, that's something I talk about a lot in my videos, is this so much more improved that you should really want to look? You should look at flipping your less than a year old phone and getting this newer phone. And it's been a long time since I felt just categorically, like objectively, that's it. I feel like this one upgrade is so much better than what we had last year that you should want to get rid of what you had last year. Honestly, I think it's been since the Snapdragon 810. If you had a phone that had a Snapdragon 810, yes, you should have wanted to flip it with the immediate successor the next year over. The 808 and the 810 were terrible. But I feel like I've had a lot of conditions on that since. The Pixel 5 is different. Or where I feel like we should criticize Google, we absolutely should, is smartphone naming convention is a shortcut, right? I go from Pixel 3 to Pixel 4. I understand that there's a through line where I want to buy the next version of that phone and I want it to be the better version. If you have a Pixel 4, it's a lot trickier to say that there's a through line because of this pivot. The Pixel 5's cheaper, so that should be a huge clue. It's $200 cheaper than the Pixel 4 that came before it. That should be an indication of where Google is positioning this, but Google didn't call it Pixel 5. You know, there's the Pixel 4a, the Pixel 4a 5g. This is just straight Pixel 5. So I wouldn't fault a consumer for thinking like, I've got a Pixel 4. Maybe I should flip it and get the Pixel 5. And thinking that that's a one-to-one. But this is where we've got to do a better job of explaining those differences. Because someone on a Pixel or a Pixel 2, or maybe even a Pixel 3, might see something in here that they would really appreciate, even if, like, say, from a Pixel 3 to the Pixel 5, the processing power is more of a lateral move. The other lifestyle features and the better battery life in the 5G might be totally worth it. And that, to me, becomes the more important consumer demographic to cater to. Smartphone ownership is now average over 2 years. So someone shopping now might still be on a Pixel 2 or a Pixel 3. This might not be a terrible buy if they understand what the pros and cons are. This to me is, I think, still one of the best communicator gadgets of the year. And I mean that specifically as a communicator gadget. Small form factor, hardware fingerprint sensor for people who can't do face unlock because they're wearing masks. It's got a 5G radio, and it's one of the smallest phones of the year with a 5G radio. And for 128 gigabytes of storage and a 90 hertz refresh rate display, this is one of the nicer packages for, you know, glance at phone, get on with your life. You know, that type of usage makes a lot of sense in my brain. If I put it up against a Pixel 4, the Pixel 4 is still going to spank this thing for things like video rendering. So it all kind of depends on what you're trying to value. But I don't have any angst over recommending this as a 2 to 3 year phone for someone who's going to be using it the way that I think Google is positioning it. And I think Google's actually pretty on point. They're not trying to make over-the-top grandiose claims about what the Pixel 5 can do. Again, their marketing is pretty conservative. It's like, this is the ultimate Google 5G phone. Yeah, this is their top-of-the-line 5G phone. I mean, they're not even trying to say this is the ultimate Google phone, because the Pixel 4 and the Pixel 4 XL are still more powerful. In fact, the Pixel 4 XL just beat my the Pixel 4 XL is faster at video rendering than the Note 20 Ultra. I mean, if you slept on the Pixel 4, you missed one of the absolute most powerful platforms for image editing and video content. And that's fine. It's okay to miss things, you know. I can't say the Pixel 5 competes in that same arena, so we'll see how that goes. But I feel like we get a little hung up. I was having a conversation on the Reddit about the Xperia 5 Mark II, and people saying, well, it's a shame it's coming out in December. And you're like, well, yeah, it's a little late in the year. Totally appreciate that is a concern. But let's say you were interested in an Xperia 5 Mark II, and you really were interested in what Sony has to offer. HS power control, better cameras, awesome camera software, a headphone jack on a premium phone. Would it matter as much to you if a Galaxy comes out in March with a Snapdragon 875, which is like, what, 10% more powerful? Maybe 15% more powerful in single core tasks, but doesn't have better power management features, doesn't have Sony's amazing camera software, doesn't have a headphone jack. Are you really going to be that upset to have a slightly older, insanely powerful processor and all of those other features? And I feel like that's the kind of conversation we need to focus on. The thing that's encouraging about the Pixel 5, getting back to the Pixel 5, which is why we started this whole conversation with the Pixel 5, I understand this concern, but it's a mid-ranger processor, and how is that gonna age over time? I can pick up a phone with a Snapdragon 835, and this phone is more powerful than the 835. And that 835 gets me through my daily tasks just fine. And the frustration isn't the hardware. The frustration is that 835 was likely kicked off of software support from every manufacturer after a year and a half. And if that phone had continued to receive good software support, it would still be a wonderful performer today. We have been crazy overbuying for compute power, and I want you to look at your apps and services. If you're watching this stream, it is likely that you probably play games on your phones at a higher tier than most average consumers. But beyond that, what services are actually really taxing Snapdragon 835s and 845s? And do we think that Google and app developers are going to suddenly give up on 660s, 670s, 765s? No, because most phones being sold right now, the overwhelming majority of smartphone buying practices happening in the mid-range. App developers are looking at this tier to make sure their services are going to be supported on this hardware while the average length of ownership is over 2 years. And now, Google's top-of-the-line phone this year, which is going to get 3 years of updates right behind phones like the Pixel 3a and 4a, are on this train. New Google apps, new Google services, it's going to be a bad look if they don't work well on the Pixel 5, because they made software that only catered to people buying at the premium end of the market. That's not how any of this works. So, I'm not worried. I'm really not. I'm not bothered by a Galaxy A71 over a 3-year lifespan. I'm not bothered by an LG Velvet over a 3-year lifespan. I'm certainly not bothered by Google making their own mid-range pivot. I think the only thing that bothers me about the Pixel 5 in this greater conversation is, will someone want to flip a phone that they probably don't need to? A Pixel 3, and I think we're kind of, like, I can make the play for that. I can make the case for it. The battery life, the ultra-wide camera, wireless charging, a reverse wireless charging, a different build material for the back. I really like the build on the back of this phone. The 90 hertz refresh rate display. I can make that argument. Pixel 3 to Pixel 5? That makes sense in my brain. Someone rocking a Pixel 4 who's maybe not as savvy, but they want to feel like they're still on the leading edge, that's a bit harder. It's 5G versus more powerful processor. And especially for the way I love how the Pixel 4 just annihilates image data, the Pixel 5 doesn't do that. It's still snappy. It's still quick. It does overheat a little faster than the Pixel 4, but you'd get a 5G radio and better battery life. That's harder to put back and forth, Pixel 4 to Pixel 5. So that's why I've been a bit frustrated of late with the tech conversation in general, is there's this over-preponderance. There's this lazy spec sheet reviewing. Well, I mean, the Pixel 4 has a Snapdragon 855, and even that processor is now outdated. You know, you wouldn't want to use an 855 in a new product today because it's more powerful than everything else on the market except for the 865. So why would anyone want to use an 855? And that's not real life. You know, it's not, you don't just look at the spec sheet and go, oh, but that one has more giggle flips. I'm going to go with that one. All right, cool. I would like to see people use their phones for more stuff, but that's not really on the spec sheet. From iMicTech, I've been buying top-tier flagships for so long that now I'm afraid not to buy at the same time. But at the same time, don't know why I should spend all that money. I'm so conflicted. I'm going to put this out there as general advice, not necessarily for people in here, because I feel we're enthusiasts. There is a conversation where we should get excited about the bleeding edge of hardware and software, but I'd still want all of us to look at what is it that we do on our phones. If you're trying to replace other gadgets with your phone, it makes a lot more sense to start shopping north of $1,000. If I rock my LG V60, I am really well taken care of to leave my mirrorless camera at home and not travel with a laptop. So, you know, because I got it full MSRP at that time with the dual screen case and a memory card and a stylus. The whole package was about $1,000. I'm good. My $1,000 investment in a phone, stylus, memory card, and dual display case means I can leave $1,000 camera, and I don't know how expensive, let's say $1,500 worth of camera and $2,000 worth of laptop at home, and still roughly create the same style of content that I would be making with those other two gadgets and my phone in addition to that. If that's what you're trying to do in your sphere, if it's working on documents, if it's doing sketchpad work or artistry of some kind, photo editing, if you're trying to, you know, do conference calls and you need something that can prop up and has a decent webcam, blah, 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 blah. Once you can start removing other computers from your personal area network, it makes a lot of sense to start shopping higher. If you're walking around with one of these crazy premium phones, but then you still turn to your laptop to do all of the real computing, and you still, you know, fire up a, you know, desktop editing software because that's the real computer. Why? Why spend $1,000 plus on your phone if you're just using it for the communications basics. And that's what I don't understand. So, from Kyoto, why eat pizza? It is so outdated. I mean, yeah, we should move on. Calzones are the thing, right? From Baki86, do you think there's going to be a Pixel 5a next year? And if yes, is it going to have the same SoC as the Pixel 5? So that's a very good question, and I think it's likely. What I think we'll see is, or if we don't see a Pixel 5a, man, that's so tough. If we don't see the direct Pixel 5a, what we might see is maybe a refresh to the Pixel 4a line. Now that I know we can do 5G in here, maybe we do end up with a Pixel 4a 5G and a Pixel 4a 5G XL. Maybe that's the split, something like that. But this whole year of distribution has hit every manufacturer hard. Even Apple was late to announcing their iPhones compared to where they were last year, right? I mean, just a little bit, but Apple. Apple is the king of component distribution. Even they have had some kind of issue lining up all the parts to make a phone. So really what I think is going to be telling is next year is an opportunity to see if we get a Pixel 6 that steps back up to more of a premium tier. But if this sells well, and I think it'll sell better than the Pixel 4, I think Google might just keep living in the mid-range. And if they do, then it's a way to simplify their product lineup. A Pixel 5a, which is sort of minor refinements over the Pixel 4a, and then a Pixel 6, which takes this up to the next tier of mid-ranger Snapdragon processors.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey, what's going on, Juan, and all of you tuned in to today's show. I'm Nick Gray from Fandroid. I've known Juan for quite a few years now, and you may have actually heard my voice from back in the day when Juan used to host the Pocket Now Weekly. If you're not familiar with Fandroid, we were actually the very first Android news site to hit the web, publishing our very first article within hours of Google making their announcement about their mobile operating system. Of course, a lot has changed since then, but we're still here covering the news, reviewing new gadgets, and of course, sharing our passion for Android with anyone who wants to join in. You can find all of our work on fandroid.com. That's P-H-A-N-D-R-O-I-D.com. But if you love video, and I'm sure you do since you're listening to Juan's podcast, be sure to check us out at youtube.com/fandroid as well. And that's going to do it. Juan, thanks for featuring us. Back to you.
From Brayden, I have the Pixel 4 XL and I bought the Pixel 5 solely because of the battery and the size. I like smaller phones and I need something that won't die in 4 hours of being off the charger. That was absolutely, again, I think Google's biggest misstep with the Pixel 4 was not communicating better how to alter the battery life settings on the Pixel 4. From Erica Harrington, that's what I'm saying. I love my Note 10 Plus and use it for everything work and recreation related. And like, and a Note 10 is the right phone to get your money's worth. Again, Erica, if you're not using desktop mode, Dex is so rad. You know, like, I love seeing we can push these things so much farther than like, well, you know, I took a couple photos with the auto HDR and they had juicy colors. That's not the gig. You can do that at $300 now. Sorry, I'm way behind. You know what? Pixel 5, I'm going to be having more of a recap and like a full review coming out soon. I'm going to be combining, again, some of the camera reviewing with the Pixel 4a and the Pixel 5. They're similar enough. I feel I can kind of join those together. There's going to be more to say. And it's frustrating because like, I've got the Note 20 Ultra over there. If I'm looking through stats on YouTube, that phone is dead. I've got the Pixel 5. It just came out. Consumers, it's still in pre-order in a bunch of markets. And I'm looking at stats and they're plummeting. You know, the amount of effort I'm going to put into making a video on these topics, on these gadgets, and they're already dead. And you're like, that's not the gig. We need to be doing a better job of following up on this stuff. Because there are also some software update issues that I really hope are addressed in some subsequent bug patches. If Google's going to make the play that this is a phone for software services and Google platform, they need to do a little cleaning. You know, like, we need to follow up on that. Did they actually achieve what they claimed that they could do? So, oh, and then we absolutely need to see from JJ4884, any indication about Google's home-built silicon. Man, I really hope those rumors pan out where Google and Samsung work together on making custom silicon for Google phones and Google products. It would be amazing if the next Pixelbook were on a custom chipset. It would be incredible if their phones, if we could get back to another Pixel tablet of some kind. Man, that would be nice. That would be really nice. Q3 Becker, we need NVIDIA to come back and destroy Qualcomm. We don't need NVIDIA to come back and destroy Qualcomm. We need NVIDIA to come back and compete. And we need Samsung Exynos to come back and compete. And we need MediaTek to start actually talking about their products, where I tried interviewing someone at MediaTek to talk about Dimensity, and no one wanted to talk to me. MediaTek did not want to talk to me about the Dimensity, where I was crazy excited to talk about another chipset in the mid-range. It's like they didn't want anyone to know that their chip was going to be in a Velvet on T-Mobile. I don't get that. It just blows my mind. I mean, maybe they thought I wanted to do like a hit piece, but I was like, I want to talk to someone in your PR interview just so you can say nice things about your product, because I'm excited to see any competition. Crickets. Radio silence. So, yes, much more to say about Pixel 5. From Saeed, MediaTek's just so humble. That's why they didn't want to, you know, not talk about my mic cable just flipped into an awkward place. Oof, little wardrobe malfunction there for the podcast this week. Is this thing on? Is this still scratchy? Okay, good. So who wants to unbox a OnePlus 8T in a reviewer kit? I got mine Saturday, and I really wanted to do sort of an immediate live stream, but I kind of felt like, you know, my gadget block on the podcast can sometimes be a little light. So now I've got some good stuff. I wanted to focus on doing the gadget block. So we've got this beautiful red box sitting over here on my desk. Oh, Gabaletta's, I need to stretch first. That's right. I absolutely do. I'm going to do. Ah. Oh, and I should pull another mug of water. Now, this is the most delicious coffee mug. So really the issue that we have with a lot of coffee mugs is the fidelity of the beverage that you're consuming, and you want the most stable connection that you can have to your beverage. So, you might notice as I'm sipping a tasty beverage from this delicious coffee mug that it has the best possible connection method for the highest quality, stability, and fidelity of whatever you connect it to. And that is available in my merch store. So I'm going to take another quick sip right here. Ah. Oh, from Erica Harrington. You have one. I always wanted to review a OnePlus. You're so lucky. I'm actually still really positive on what OnePlus has been trying to accomplish this year. It's been something of a bother for how much I loved using the OnePlus 8 Pro, that it kind of got panned for, oh, it's $1,000 OnePlus. Yeah, and it's really good. All right, let me see if this works, because I've had issues with my Elgato over the last couple live streams. So let's see. It worked. This is the reviewer kit. This is the OnePlus 8T Ultra. Stops at nothing. Let's crack this bad boy open and see what's inside. It's a beautiful red box. From Digitalis, the 8T absolutely trounces the 5T. I mean, it's definitely going to be way more powerful. I don't think anyone would dispute that. This sleeve that they've put around, the Ultra Stops at Nothing sleeve, is a little tricky to get through, but So Ultra stops at nothing. I'm not entirely sure what that is supposed to mean in terms of feel-good marketing, but it sounds like something impressive, right? You know? It's Ultra. Is it Ultra? Okay. That's cool. Excuse me. Now, here's what I love about the way that OnePlus packages these things up, is that they're always a little tricky. Yeah, okay, so this butterfly's open. Isn't that pretty? Okay, I gotta click out for just a second. But not into my browser. I had this plea during my LG Wing unboxing, where LG had a crazy, I mean, like, the LG Wing reviewer kit has a video brochure that autoplays when you open this pamphlet. There's a video display in their pamphlet. This is shocking from LG, right? One of my biggest criticisms of LG over these last couple of years is them getting on the pulse of their marketing. And now they're doing really cool stuff. But this plea started with OnePlus. This is such a beautiful first impression. This is such a wonderful way to greet a piece of technology that is going to be your lifestyle companion. This is your daily driver gadget. We live out of our phones. Please make a limited edition pre-order kit. There are so many consumers who would love this to be their first experience. And you get to charge like a little bit extra for all of the fancy packaging and the experience and like getting into the OnePlus mindset, the OnePlus lifestyle. This is, and again, don't make many of them. Make it like the first 200 people who pre-order, or make it a special like option that you check, because you're going to want a case and maybe some earbuds or something. But you make the pamphlet and the pretty butterfly opening box, and just how nice this is. It's just, and there are magnets that kind of close this all up. Again, it's so hard to express, like, this is just so much nicer. So any manufacturer, again, let me click out here real quick. Apple isn't putting accessories in the box anymore, right? There's no charger. So you go through your options. You say, hey, I want this phone. I want this case. I want this fast charger. I want this wireless charger. And let me get a pair of Bluetooth earbuds, right? Let me get some OnePlus buds. And it shows up in a box like this. And now your fully stocked OnePlus lifestyle experience is ready to go. I'd love it. I would really, really appreciate manufacturers affording consumers this type of experience. Okay, rant over. So I just wanna see, this is the big hello. Ooh, there's a weighty brochure in here too. Although it's flexible, so I don't think OnePlus did a video brochure. It says hello. It's just a nice little greeting. We kind of open this up here. Oh, here's the OnePlus 8T reviewer's guide. So I'll give this a read through and just make sure I didn't miss anything when I start using the phone, but I can get rid of that. Actually, real quick, let's see, because this looks kind of fancy. I just need something that I can kind of pop open the cellophane. And OnePlus 8T reviewer's guide, if this is a booklet. And ooh, real glossy. Talking about the company's philosophy. I don't know what this is, but it's kind of shiny and glossy. Maybe it's just to kind of protect what's going on in there. Always on display, Oxygen OS. Flowscape, some camera stuff, video portrait mode, the improvements to the image stabilization, the new camera module. Okay, so I'll page this a bit more. Kind of toss this. Now over here on the side, again, what I'm talking about is we've got like containers and pockets, and there's like a ribbon that helps you pull the phone out of the box, and a couple cases. So I really liked these teal cases on the OnePlus 8 and the 8 Pro, but I think I'm gonna try this one. This is like a circuit board. Let's pull this out real quick and see, because this looks pretty fancy, and I think it'll look good on video. Again, OnePlus is so good at doing this kind of stuff where the accessories they include are designed to kind of help us make our gadgets look cool on video. So there's sort of like a depth effect. Let me get this a little closer to the camera. Where there are different layers and some of it's kind of translucent. You can kind of look through. So I think this is what I'm gonna rock for my reviews. It's it looks like cyber. I don't know what we would call that. Gary the Fireman, lovely schematics. All right, but let's get into the phone. I'm going to pull this box out. Let me take the whole reviewer kit box down now because we want to focus on the actual gadget. Whew, that thing's heavy. I got to work out more. Got to do like some OnePlus deadlifts and stuff. So we open it here. That's handy. The packaging, all very well considered. Get this plastic wrap off. And I realize for those of you who are probably going to be tuning in on the audio version of this podcast, not the best podcast, because a lot of this is based on visuals. So next week, we'll be back to cranky news, and we'll spend more time on all of that. Come on. Get this box open. Oof, it's really snug. And there's like a little 8T that's peeking out from the side. Just kind of set that down right there. Let me throw this plastic wrap away. And get this. The papers. Do we care about the papers? They're papers. They're really tall and skinny papers. And there's a SIM card tip, a tool. And then the fact that you're reading this proves that you're looking for something different, something more. The OnePlus 8T is more than a phone. It's an invitation to join a movement of rebels who ask, can I do better? Instead of, is this good enough? That's what we're asking. And now, ooh, it's signed by Pete, founder and CEO of OnePlus. That's always a nice little note. And let's see, warp charging. So this is the warp charger. It's got some rounded sides on it. Looks a little softer, looks a little friendlier than some of the chargers in the past. And I wanna see, so there's our OnePlus cable. I've got a bunch of these, and it's now USB-C to USB-C. So that's kind of handy. And then the box is all really well glued together. There's nothing else in the box. So it doesn't look like this 8T is going to come with a case. I guess they don't do that anymore in OnePlus land. But here is the OnePlus 8T. Got a little indicator that NFC is up here by the camera module. Let me take off this sticker. I apologize for the camera autofocus. I shoot on a Panasonic. So it has kind of an issue close focusing on mirrored and shiny reflective surfaces. But here it is. It's got a nice satiny finish. Oh, you know, it feels really nice in the hand. You know, it feels like something that's designed for primates and that it won't slice your palm open. So that's a really nice consideration. You know, they made it so that humans could use it. And I really think that that's smart. You know, there haven't been any phones in the last, like, 10 years that I felt like weren't designed for humans, but this one is. So it's really good that they made it for people, you know, instead of, like, they didn't make it for, octopi, because that would have been a mistake. I'm a gadget reviewer. Here's our fancy camera module. So 48 megapixel with OIS, we got ultra-wide telephoto, we got a little rocker switch. Oh wait, no, we don't have telephoto? I'm gonna have to play with that. Now I need to look up stats. Ugh, I did not read GSM Arena like I should have. But it's a real pretty device. I put the box down here. Let me click back over into this and I can put it next to my face. It's a OnePlus. Where is my... Oh, it's over here. So this is my OnePlus 8. And I had the Aura Glow fancy lighting OnePlus 8. And you can kind of see it's real mirror finishy and reflective. And now the new OnePlus 8T, where it's more of a satin soft matte finish. Pretty nice. I'm going to be really curious. I think to me this is kind of one of the things I hope OnePlus kind of not calms down. That's not the right word. It's the notion that they're going to be coming out with a phone at the beginning of the year, a mid-ranger like the Nord, in the second quarter, and then refreshing their line with the T series. And I'm a little more anxious about a OnePlus that's putting out like 6 phones a year. I'd like to see a OnePlus that is maybe refining or simplifying their lineup a little bit more. I don't know. It says hello. Hello. I shouldn't have to update it. It's Android 11 out of the box. I agree to the terms and conditions. I'm not going to do a full setup here, but I kind of want to just get in. And again, I mean, it's a OnePlus, so 120 hertz refresh rate display, and even just doing something silly like putting in my Wi-Fi credentials is wonderfully smooth. It would help if I could remember my password. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's the same password I keep on my luggage. Anyone? No one? All right. But I like it. It's cute. It's pretty. You know, people are saying, oh, this phone is going to absolutely destroy phones like the Pixel. Here's the one thing I do want to show. 5G phone to 5G phone, more powerful phone to obviously a more mid-range or less powerful phone. The thing that someone might be interested in is how much smaller that Pixel is. I mean, it's a little less wide. I mean, it's not like OnePlus phones are super broad. So it's a little less wide, but it's quite a bit shorter. So especially for those of us who have been looking for a good one-hander, again, as a communications device, I think appropriately targeting the right consumer, there's still a conversation to be had about different pros and cons and what you might be willing to sacrifice on and what the device build material might be. I'm going to be really interested to see if I can track 5G battery life, because I can't do it very well. It doesn't work very well in my neck of the woods, and I'm not traveling a lot right now. But, you know, a 765 with a 4,000 milliamp hour battery versus the OnePlus 8T with a more powerful processor, is the Pixel 5 going to be better for overall runtime? You know, out during the day, if I'm just handling communication stuff, is this the phone that's going to make it past dinner time better? So copy apps and data. So let's go ahead and copy what I've got on my Pixel 5. So I'm going to have to sign in. Any questions so far? Is anyone curious about JJ, Sony versus the 8T? That's actually a pretty good showdown too. Dave Burns is saying the iPhone 12 mini will not be a battery champ, and that is for sure. I love the iPhone SE. The iPhone SE is such a brilliant Mighty Mouse phone, and I love having Touch ID back. The battery bump that we see on the 12 mini, from the iPhone SE to the 12 mini, is not encouraging. I'm a little anxious about the 12 mini, because the iPhone SE, you can nuke that battery. I mean, you can drain that puppy fast. And if you're going to be cycling that battery with a lot of charging, just expect a battery replacement over the life of that phone. I kind of feel like 12 mini might be in the same ballpark. Oh, I got to put in my password here, my super secret password. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I don't know why that was so much harder. And just a quick two-step verification, because I can't reach my other phone here. Let me... Oh, did I miss it? I swiped it away, because I'm a dork. All right, let me see if I can get it from here. Dang it.
Where did it go to? Resend.
I'm trying to do this all techie style, and I'm somewhat successful. Galaxy S20 FE versus the 8T from Big House Productions, I think, is a great showdown. Gambaletta, the iPhone 12 mini has a bigger battery than the SE, though. It does. It has a bigger battery and a 5G radio and a more powerful processor. So even though there are some power management considerations for that, it's likely that... Also, I think it operates at a higher resolution. It's likely that all of those will stack up against the small bump in battery capacity. Because what is it? It's a 2200 milliamp hour battery on a 5G phone. I think that sounds pants on head silly. I know Apple can always claim, you know, well, we can optimize and efficiency and blah, 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 blah. On the smaller phones, no. You nuke that battery. Oh, good. Okay. And restore. Cool. So my OnePlus 8T is restoring right now, and I'm just going to let it kind of kick for a bit and let it do its thing and go through some of these other questions here. From Dominic Wong, I think it would take a few years before we would get a long battery life on 5G. We're solving that with bigger phones and bigger batteries, but it's going to take a while. And also the optimization that we saw with LTE. When we started combining the LTE radio onto the chipset, that significantly improved performance and battery life. And then Qualcomm wanted to make the play where they could carve the modem back out and force component costs to go higher because they don't have any competition. It's pretty great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, from BXNNY05, I really hope they add the Touch ID on the power button. Touch ID on a power button for a future iPhone would be real nice. Basically, I just want Apple to make an iPad that's a phone. That's all I want. I want pencil support. I want USB-C with true USB 3 accessory support. I just want an iPad in a phone form factor. And it's driving me nuts that Apple won't give me that. And they're continuing to charge me more for products that kind of do the same things that they've always done. From Max77, is the Sony Mark 5 Mark II a bit too pricey in the US market? There's definitely a Sony tax. Sony considers themselves to be a premium label and a premium brand. But I would also weigh that against what is the Xperia 5 Mark II's competition. Because it doesn't have a lot. So unfortunately, when you want certain features or you want certain hardware or you want certain like camera modes, that's the price you pay, you know? I think if someone were really interested in what a Sony had to offer, the Xperia 5 Mark II is a reasonable price for the performance that you get. If you're only looking to compare it against like gaming or graphics performance on a Samsung, then yeah, you can shop way more effectively. But that's also the kind of conversation we should have with anything, you know, like, well, I mean, a Ford F-350 turbo diesel dually is way more expensive than a Nissan Versa. Why would anyone buy the Ford? You know, so you don't just go, but Snapdragon 865. You go headphone jack, matched stereo speakers. They both have, you know, high refresh rate displays. Are we looking at advanced power management and power control? So if you're using your phone more aggressively, you're not taxing the battery and you can get more life out of it. What are we comparing against? And again, you want a phone that has a shutter button on it so that you can use it like a camera, then it has zero competition. Congratulations, that shutter button costs a couple hundred dollars now because no one else wants to make one. Matt Tyler saying we should look at the Velvet MediaTek version versus the OnePlus 8T. I think that would also be a good showdown too. Andreas is asking if the LG G8 is a good phone today. I think it's still a solid phone and you can get them stupid cheap. So they're powerful, they're pocket-sized. They're one of the only options available for true face unlock and with a rear fingerprint sensor. What's not to like? The G8's still a great phone. All right, So we're getting into the last 25 minutes, the last half hour here. My OnePlus 8T is going through its setup here. So we can talk a little bit more about that if you guys want to ask about OnePlus 8T stuff. I can pick it up and I can reference it. But I've also been spending a couple days with the LG Wing. So who would like to chat out some LG Wing? Because, you know, it's a phone that does this. There aren't any phones that do this anymore. It's like the Sidekick. That was the gig. It's really satisfying. It's really cool. So, obviously, one of the first things I did, LG Wing, was play around with some camera stuff. So, if you'll pardon the home movie, I'm just going to play a little clip of this. I'm not going to play the whole thing because I don't put my daughter on social media. But the gimbal. The gimbal is pretty legit. Here, let me throw this over here and go into my browser. And so we went out to the park. We had a lovely day kind of running around on... our parks just recently opened up and we were, you know, slathering hand sanitizer all over my poor daughter. But we actually let her loose on a playground because there weren't a lot of kids out playing and she could stay socially distant and she was wearing her mask like a champ, like a champ. She's not yet five and she's got this thing down pat. And it's so stinking easy to shoot with. You know, again, I'm not breaking any crazy news here. Like folks that were using other phones with gimbals were already talking about this, but the fact that it makes a T-shape where you get a good landscape view of what you're shooting and you've got controls docked under your thumb is super handy. So, you know, like you follow her across the bridge and then I just run right in. I mean, this is even a step better than a lot of the software stabilization that I've been praising on phones for the last year or so. So it's pretty remarkable what we can pull off with this phone on a mid-ranger processor. And with the Pixel 5 and the Wing now, what I think is really interesting are these are the first two mid-ranger chipset phones that do support 4K video at 60 frames per second. And on the Wing, it's even a step further where it's the full manual video control that we have on a phone like the V60, where, you know, we've got all the same manual options. And then down here, up to an 80 megabit per second bit rate on 4K 60 frame per second video H.264. So there's really not much holding us back. Those of you who are concerned, what about the performance in like 3 years? Are you shooting 4K video at 60 frames per second at an 80 megabit per second bit rate with high quality audio on your phone right now? Are you doing that on the regular? That video that I just showed you of my daughter playing around in the park, that was mostly from the gimbal. Gimbal video is 1080p. It's full HD. But it was shot beautifully smooth. It's wonderfully smooth video. And then I edited it on the Wing. So I put out a really high quality HD video for my family and friends. Excuse me, full HD 1080p. A really high quality video from the Wing, all on the Wing. I downloaded the soundtrack from my NAS. I threw it into PowerDirector. I stitched all the pieces together. There are really pretty wipes and fade transitions in between every clip. I've got an animated graphic at the beginning of the video, a beautiful fade out, zoom in, punch in, keyframing. There's a green screen effect at one point. I can't show you that part of the video. All on the Wing on this mid-range processor. Are you doing that on your phone? Because I am, and it's fine. My V60 could have done all of that faster. Absolutely could have done that faster. I was not held back by having that on the Wing. And had video features that I currently don't have on any other phone sold in the United States. So this is... this is fun. One of the major things, like, I'm writing a script right now. Excuse me, I need to get a drink of water. I'm writing a script right now where I'm taking a look. The main question I've gotten is like, well, what would you say, like, Wing versus LG V60? And spoiler for those of you watching right now, I wouldn't offer these phones as competing options. They're just different enough. V60 definitely takes a significant win for just being one of the most brutally powerful phones of the year. It still has that wonderful headphone jack, that quad DAC, and the dual display case on the V60 is better for when you stop. If you're sitting down and you've got both hands and your visual attention on the V60, it's a better experience. If you want to put the V60 down, it's a better experience. If you're on the go, this action helps a lot. So this phone isn't as nice to put down. Like, you've got to put it in a stand or prop it up or do something. But when you're out and using it, it's a better experience. You know, it feels really nice in the hand. It's a better experience on the go. And so that to me would become the big dividing line, is do you want the phone that's going to be the better, more powerful computer, but you've got to kind of sit and focus on using it, or do you want the phone that's actually going to be better, more usable with extra screen out in the field? That's our choice. That's our kind of comparison point. Let me go through some of these if we have any questions here. Walt Samarista, watching videos way more convenient to watch on swivel mode. Again, it's real nice. Like, I was watching a YouTube live stream and I'm walking around and I'm kind of cleaning up. My parents might come to visit for my daughter's birthday, and I'm watching this video and, like, I want to reply to a comment, and you tap on the little comment bar, and then you type down here, and it doesn't open the keyboard all over your screen. And from those people who were complaining, actually, let me pull it up real quick. Let me go to something that doesn't have so many personal searches in it. Here we go. Actually, you know what? I can even show this better. I set up this whole second camera and I'm not even really using it. So when we look at, like, what LG has done for software, this is a number one of the perks I hope we see move to the V60 and Velvet soon. LG's keyboard from Velvet to Wing got so much better. Like, even just the cute little diagramming for, like, your voice actions and emojis, and finally a dedicated search for GIFs on the keyboard. It's so much more responsive. The autocorrect works so much better. And the keyboard layout just reminds me a bit more of SwiftKey or Google, the Gboard. It's crazy. You know, like, I definitely agreed with some of the criticisms, like Mr. Mobile. Oh, this Velvet keyboard is just so hard to use. The Velvet keyboard is twitchy. There's no way around it. I didn't think it was unusable, but it's definitely a step aside. Like, you gotta do things LG's way. Wing is so much more familiar. And I swear, I mean, this is rocking the 765. We definitely have some software jank, because everything is about, like, pretty animations. So you see, like, it rotates and it moves and panels and slides. So all of this takes up a little time. And you will find, like, stutters when you try to move from one aspect to another. And everything does this. You want to switch back and forth between different apps. Every app transition has kind of an animated transition. It can get a little kludgy. So we definitely hope to see some refinement, future updates, just kind of tweaking the UI a little bit and smooth out some of those animations. But for using the 765, LG is tapping into some additional horsepower that I don't think the Velvet is quite as snappy. It, you know, the Velvet can't shoot 4K 60 frame per second video. It's interesting to see, like, now that we're getting into the end of 2020, manufacturers are extracting a bit more juice out of the chipsets that were good performers at the beginning of the year. This is absolutely a path that I think LG is walking phenomenally well. Like it's really exciting to see some goofy and some strange experiments, because there are uses for this that you don't know you need. That's an awkward way of saying it. You wouldn't know that you would like that. You would want to play with it. It's tricky. It's tough to just outright recommend, but you know, hey, you want to shoot action-y content, you want that gimbal, and you want beautiful 4K video from a more traditional camera layout. You want all that control, you want all that interactivity, and this holds really well. Holding it one-handed and shooting landscape video and having a joystick that can kind of pan the video around while you're walking. You can be walking in one direction and do just a slight pan in the opposite direction, and it's so fluid. It makes a strong argument for itself. It works way better. I mean, I'm excited. It works better than I thought it was going to. Gabaletta, even Flossie was talking about this when watching videos on the Wing was much more enjoyable because of the better grip than any other phone. And from BXNNY, I'm going to start calling you Bunny. Or Benny. Benny. Benny 05. Being able to record horizontally while holding the phone vertically seems really comfortable. It's nice. Santiago, if the Wing 3 has the quad DAC, I may jump on it. That's one of the concerning bits. If Wing sells really well, if the future... We know LG's working on a scrollable. Like, why have a folding phone if you can scroll a phone to make a larger display? Something tells me our days of quad DAC and headphone jacks are probably numbered on LG too.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
From Pakostin, Juan, would you prefer a larger bezel for the front-facing camera but with 3.5 millimeter jack instead of the pop-up? Oh, me personally? Yeah. Oh, yeah. You just like that. That's a given. I don't use selfie cameras except for video conferencing. Like I shoot every photo or memory of my family or myself from the rear cameras on my phone. For myself personally, all day, every day, give me a headphone jack, find the space for it, and if you need to sacrifice the selfie camera, sacrifice the selfie camera, because I just don't care. Walt Semarista, do mics work using the dongle included in the box? We showed that on my Wing unboxing, and they do. From Mark, do you think T-Mobile's not going to use the MediaTek 1000 in the Wing like they did in the Velvet? I am very curious to see. I think Wing is such an expensive manufacturing ordeal that I don't know if LG would be able to fulfill orders as well and have different chipsets. Like, it takes some finagling to swap parts around. And the optimization that they've done on the 765 would seem to me that Wing is probably a limited batch of phones. It's not going to be a crazy top seller. It's not gonna, you're not going to see Wings all over the place just because. But it's such a successful experiment in my early usage so far, and they've extracted so much power out of the 765. My guess would be all Wings will be 765s. It's not like we're going to see a 4G-only version of the Wing with the 845 like we did with the Velvet. So I'm gonna say like we're probably just going to coast on that. Oh, and I need everyone to congratulate at Fat Produce. Andrew Wallace is getting married. By the time we hold our next live stream, he will be a married man. It's pretty great. For Mr. Comer, pear character lifting some weight saying, keep it up. Thank you for the super sticker. I really appreciate that. And thank you for supporting the channel. From Oliver, can we get this keyboard on old LGs? I really hope at least Velvet and V60 get this new keyboard. Having this type of keyboard in landscape on the dual display phones would be so nice. I switch back and forth. I mean, I do use the keyboard dual display as a thumb board. You split it apart and it works a lot better. But it's not as nice. Again, I don't think LG gets enough credit for when they do improve software features. People love to sit there and parrot the sort of, G5 days, G4 days. Oh, LG software is terrible. Like, not if you've used it recently. It's actually really good. And then I'll compare it to my Note 20, like my V60 versus Note 20 Ultra, and things like camera performance. V60 every day. A couple features are really nice on the Note 20 Ultra, but even when you're just switching modes and Samsung's trying to do this pretty animation with the text reforming, slows the camera down. And like, this phone is way too powerful to be this stuttery. And my V60 is like Wolverine's claws. It's like snick, 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 snick. And it's not as pretty. It's not as animated, but I don't care about that when I'm trying to use the camera. Trying to scroll through here. Some people saying ZTE. I haven't gotten to play with any of the recent ZTEs, and I really wish I could. I mean, Axon 7 is in my museum. It's like one of my forever phones. I'm always going to have that Axon 7. But when it comes to global distribution, when it comes to regions, when it comes to reach, and when it comes to features, I mean, like, I don't know. The ZTEs look like great OnePlus alternative, bang for buck kinds of phones. The kind of stuff that you end up getting on a Samsung or LG really kind of pushes the Android market. You know, things like better macro support, alternative user interfaces that focus on, you know, where stuff lands. You know, look at the OnePlus 8T announcement. All of the recent announcements talking about the change to their UI. And you're like, oh, well, when you drop your notification shade. Hold on. I'm going to skip this. And set my screen lock. And set it again. And unlock with fingerprint. But, you know, when OnePlus started talking about, oh, and, you know, we made all these changes so that the ergonomics of using the device were different, a lot of that stuff came from Samsung first, and LG has been working on the same stuff for their UX update. It's the South Korean style. The fingerprint sensor is working really well. It's just I'm trying to talk and scan a thumbprint at the same time. So my OnePlus 8T is like, no, no. You've got to like move it around and then put your finger on there correctly. I don't like in-display fingerprint sensors. I'd be able to do this easier looking at the camera with a rear fingerprint sensor. I wouldn't need to give it as much attention. Oh, I don't need to. Oh, come on. Don't make me do the, I can swipe back. Well done. Go home. Recents. Well done. Good job, smartphone user. So, you know, when we see, you know, you swipe down and things kind of reformat and repopulate, and now the OnePlus UI is going to be prettier and friendlier and softer around the edges. You know, we can kind of credit the South Korean style for doing that first. When it comes to just putting up, oh, you can get more on a ZTE than you can on an LG, I guess, probably not. I mean, like, I can pick up a Velvet, and it's a beautiful single-screen experience. Are there ZTEs with dual display support and a stylus? I mean, like, is that a thing? The camera performance is really good. LG's camera performance has always been really solid, and their manual camera modes are excellent. I mean, it's the headphone jack on the Velvet is the second best headphone jack on any phone this year and is only outperformed by the headphone jack on a V60. So it's never one-to-one. If it's just chipset, sure, there are really cheap ways to get a powerful processor. But beyond that, it's a bit more nuanced than, oh, LG was garbage that one time and now I'll never use them ever again. Cool. That's not what we're talking about. All right, let me scroll down here. But yes, early usage on the Wing, very positive. It's joining a conversation that to me is, I'm sorry, I'm trying to do like 10 things here in my brain all at the same time. So I've got the Galaxy Note 20 Ultra. It's on loan from TK. I really miss my Surface Duo. I really miss it. What that phone was already starting to do before this last update and before some of these beta launcher updates, I was on board. It's genuinely one of the best tablet experiences I've used. And getting to play with the Note 20 is fun, but it doesn't feel like the Note. It doesn't feel like it's really defining what productivity should feel like. The Wing doesn't define action, but it complements action in a really exciting way. That when you flick open the screen and you fire up the camera and you hold on to it with one hand and you've got some of the best image stabilization you'll see from a phone and gimbal-like controls, and you're just running around, and it's so fluid an experience. And I still have a hand free to, like, you know, when I shoot on my V60, it takes both hands because of that dual display case. Like, I have to give both hands to the phone. Having some kind of alternative hardware enables other experiences. Having a dual display Microsoft Surface is a different tablet experience, and that's exciting. Having a twisty screen on an LG enables new experiences, just like dual display did. They're different new experiences, but I'm doing things on a phone different and more than I would on a traditional single screen device. And I'm not having to sacrifice the single screen experience to get that. So it's more. I want more of this kind of competition because it helps us define better products for, and even for niche use. Even if it's a smaller community, they still deserve to have a top tier experience. I mean, like, the Wing would enable me to not worry about having action cameras in a way that another phone might not be able to do the same. That gimbal. Again, is it the Vivo? Someone remind me. I can't remember. What's the other phone? Is it Vivo something 50X? That I can't remember what the phone is. But if you're rocking a phone like that, you don't feel the same burning need to walk around with a big motorized stick. And you can leave that stick at home. And I can't do that on another phone. I feel like there are some phones where, depending on where I was shooting, I would need the big motorized, the Vivo X50. Yeah. Thank you. I couldn't remember. It was like Vivo 50X or what. Too many words in my brain. Joe Hickey, TK says he's not giving it back. No! I want my Surface Duo back. Oh. See, so here's the difference. So when we did the exchange, and you can see this in TK's video, when we met up at the park, TK was really kind. He gave me the Note 20 Ultra and a nice bumper case for it. And it's great. That's the phone. I gave TK a hard case that I repurposed from a travel battery, the Surface Duo, the Surface Slim Stylus, the Microsoft Bluetooth folding keyboard, and the headphone dongle. So yeah, that wasn't very good. But I packaged, like, if you wanted to take this out and never travel with a laptop ever again, here is the experience that you would just open up and you would have, like, the full Surface experience ready to go. So that's why he doesn't want to give it back, because I gave him the total package. So I miss that phone. I do. TK. Nope. Sorry, bro. DT and Nail, hashtag some not gonna get his duo back guy. Root Knight 5, giving him the Surface headphone dongle was kind of a move. Well, I mean, it was better than nothing, because the Note 20 just has those earbuds. So it wasn't like I got any headphone dongle with the Note 20. But it was also, again, to my credit, it wasn't that I gave him a Surface Duo and then gave him, like, an amazing Fio BTR 5. That's not the Surface experience. Like, again, I feel like a consumer buying a Surface Duo would look at that dongle and be like, okay, well, I guess I'll get that one. It's the Microsoft one. And that would be the wrong thing to do. You would not want to do that. So I still gave him the Surface Duo experience, even with a few of the not as good bits, but it's still totally complete. A totally complete package. Simon says, Hypno, one day you'll be reunited and it will feel so good. It will. And one of the things that I'm really looking forward to trying is talking about Fio is this Q3, which I still haven't even taken out of the plastic wrap. Actually, you know what? We're running long. Do you guys want to see me unbox some really crazy audio tech? Why not? We'll run this a little bit longer for the live stream. Not doing it for the gram, doing it for what, my YouTube metrics? Is that what we're doing it for? Doop, doop, doop. Unboxing some audio tech. I want to thank the folks at Fio for sending this over. I've been a longtime fan of their little portable DACs and amps, especially their Bluetooth kit. And this one is the Big Boy mobile amp. So let's see. Dave Burns, let's do the 3-hour power cast. After this, I really should go. But this is the Fio Q3. Nice, simple, pretty black box. And then I almost threw that on the floor. And then this right here is what makes ears really happy. So this is a little USB audio DAC amp. And I really want to point this out. THX, I don't know if I can get it to focus there. THX has been very aggressive in mobile recently. They did the certification for One More. So One More has their new Quiet Max technology, and THX now certified that for ultra low distortion. And then I forget who did another mobile amp, but it's this tiny little amp that just hangs out on a USB cable. And now they've also certified the new Q3. So it's got this clicky smooth dial for your volume right there. And it clicks right back off. That's got a really nice tactile sensation to it. You've got balanced audio, a headphone jack, and then it's USB-C down at the bottom so that you can plug this in. And I really want to try and make a case like that can kind of stick this to the back of a phone really easily and get it to connect through. But let's see. So this is charge. You have a separate thing to charge pass through. So it can charge off of your phone while it's connected. Oh, and then it looks like there's like a base toggle and then a gain toggle. So you, if you don't need the full power of this amp, that's actually really handy. It's what LG phones do based on impedance. But I also find it's kind of nice to have a manual toggle for that too. So we'll be talking about this bad boy. Oh, and just to kind of see, you know, opposite a Pixel 5. See, it's definitely going to take up some space in a pocket, but it's not too bad. I guess I would wonder, like, would I wouldn't mount, like, yeah, like I would want to keep it USB to USB, but then your headphone jacks are going to be kind of up here, so they should stay loose, or maybe I should come up with, like, a battery case. Like, maybe if I call Zero Lemon and get a big old battery bump and then stick this to the back of that, that would work. Something like that might work well. But I have very high expectations for this high-res audio player here, or audio pass-through here, just because of so few phones that have any kind of good headphone audio anymore. So it's good times. Real good times. Again, we want to treat our ears. If you absolutely hate your ears, then you should talk to other people. People that, like, do everything on AirPods. I don't know. Something like that. Oh, Arif Kinchin, what's up, man? We haven't talked in a while, Arif. Thanks for stopping by. From Benny05, I thought the BTR5 is a DAC amp already. It is. When you work with miniaturization, you have to have certain compromises for battery performance and distortion and signal stability and how powerful of an amp you can put in. So when you look at like this Q3 to a BTR5, you can see like, oh yeah, this is a little Bluetooth puck and this is like almost a flask. You know, like I can also keep bourbon in it or something. But the idea is we're talking a premium platform for audio fidelity versus one of the best Swiss Army knife all-rounders. So we should be able to talk about some of the differences between these two. And Dominic Wong, yeah, phones have very bad sound quality. Most of them do, unless you're on an LG. And JJ Wan really needs to try a Dragonfly as a reference. My reference was an old Fio. I forget which one it was that I was using. It was one of the K-series, I think. I used to use that to compare everything, especially like a Pocket Now, when I started doing the real audio reviews. Gabaletta flex tape is so good. I should totally flex tape it together. It's hilarious. MacGyver it with gum and a paperclip. Simon says hypno. I'm going to have to get like some of those like sticky gummy tags just to kind of glue some of these together. I mean, because like maybe even on the wing, like maybe I can come up with some way of mounting that. I can like kind of like just kind of pop those. See, I mean, look, it's almost like it's perfectly built for the wing, right? It's even below sort of that ultra wide. So I could just kind of like right on that case. Maybe some Velcro. Maybe I'll Velcro it. That wouldn't be tacky or awful at all. I feel like Aditya, that hashtag would put me into copyright issues with another popular YouTube reviewer. So why don't we go ahead and wrap all this up? This, like I said, this was a very casual, I didn't have much of a format for what I was going to be talking about today, but so much cool gear. It's really, I keep wanting to, let me fall back on two points that I made previously. One, for manufacturers out there, please, please consider sharing the reviewer experience with your customers. Make it super limited. Make it a desirable pre-order category. But it's such a wonderful way to experience phones the way that reviewers do. And I feel like the reviewer sentiment is often colored by just this type of packaging and presentation. And it's one of the reasons why we enjoy talking about these products as much as we do. But it's also something I would love to extend, that I would love to offer for other enthusiasts I mean, who aren't interested in making YouTube reviews, but still want to experience the tech the way that we do. Oh, and Dominic Wong kicking over a super sticker. Thank you so much. Sheba Dog saying good job while raising thumbs up. I appreciate that. That's very kind of you. And thank you for supporting the podcast. The second point that I want to leave off with is I feel we as techies still need to do a better job of separating our personal use from our objectivity or from our discussion of gadgets at a broader level, where, you know, you can pick up a Pixel 5, and I feel very comfortable saying this about the Pixel 5. The Pixel 5 will probably not be as much a phone for me as the Pixel 4 XL was. That does not mean I can't imagine a lot of people who would really enjoy the Pixel 5. That separation is critical for us to have informed dialogue and good conversations, and for us to be able to find the exact right fit gadget for a specific consumer. I can put these up. I can show you a Pixel 5, and I can flip that right next to a OnePlus 8T, which is running really warm right now as it's updating everything and installing a ton of apps. And I can also very clearly communicate how I don't believe these would be options for the same consumer. I would hold this one phone up and say someone with particular needs would probably appreciate, And then I can hold this up and say, someone who is looking for something more streamlined, smaller, still wants 5G, And these are different. And it's really good that they're different, because we need more competing ideas in the tech landscape, not everyone piggybacking to try and achieve the same style experience, and then we only fight tech on very granular differences in regional pricing. We want more options that better hone in on specific experiences. Take a step outside. It's okay to still go back to your preferred brand. It's okay to say, you're like, oh, you know, I'm totally going to rock a Galaxy S20 FE, but to ignore what a Pixel 5 might offer means you might end up recommending the wrong phone to someone when they needed something different or they wanted something specific. That's the general conversation here, is we're in crazy times today. We are living a wacky existence as we all try and figure out what the new normal is going to be. And a major part of this is leaning on gadgets harder than we ever have in the past, more than we ever have before. So, it would behoove us to rise to this occasion, to make a good name for techies, to be good tech neighbors and to be good tech citizens, to have that bowl of sugar at the ready if someone walks by and needs to borrow it. You know, we have this stuff on tap. We have this knowledge ready to go. We can contribute to political discourse and inform better than someone who just got outraged by something in their Facebook feed. This is the right time for us to step up and to make a good name for ourselves. And especially those of you in this live stream, chances are probably better than average that I'm preaching to the choir. And I absolutely am not trying to lecture you as much as I am trying to share that sentiment that we need to keep it up and that we need to continue being good tech citizens and good role models and good examples of what gadgetry can mean for someone's lifestyle. And to that same token, you probably haven't gotten the kudos you deserve for helping out during work at home and school at home situations from your family and friends. So I'd like to say thank you. Thank you for being a good tech neighbor. So folks, that's going to wrap it up here. I need to actually like shoot videos on this stuff and finish reviews on this stuff. So I'm going to get to that. And I also have to go and help my wife and my daughter with some school and home work situations. But I want you all to have a fantastic week. I'm going to have a lot of fun this week. This is going to be a fun week for me, especially digging into all this stuff. So I hope you out there are going to have a fun week too. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I'll catch you all back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Be safe. Take care. It's still crazy out there. I want to see everyone's names back here, especially, you know, join us on the Twitch too. You know, come and share some virtual hugs and some virtual fist bumps and have a good old time talking about our favorite gadgets. But be well. Stay safe. I'll catch you back.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.